traders in Chicago spent much of the week trying to buy corn acres. We'll discuss whether or not they got the job done and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with John Bondurant, president of Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee. Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investment Services, Kirk Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Let's begin today's discussion with this question. Since last Friday's planting intentions report, the ratio of November soybeans to December corn has changed from 2.36 to 1 on March 30th to 2.15 to 1 at the end of trade on April 7th. Has enough been done to buy corn acres, or are further adjustments necessary? Paul Cooley.
Well, you know, when we look at it, the one of the big areas of concern, of course, for the imbalance, obviously, was fertilizer costs and maybe problems with last year's crop. Our general impression is when we listen and talk to our farmer friends, the smaller farmer is probably making some changes. The seed companies are out there very aggressively trying to sell their corn. And my general impression is that there has been some additional corn acres bought. I think the USDA's planted acreage numbers were probably slightly wrong in their profiling, but it'll be interesting to see. And the real verdict is in the state of Illinois with the 700,000 acres. We'll know the answer before the marketplace does.
Matt Bennett.
I would tend to agree with Paul. I think when I talk to guys south of about where I'm at on Route 16, I think there's still a lot of guys, you know, going beans back on the corn stalks. But you get north, I think in anywhere north of Route 16, you still have a lot of guys that maybe could swing some acres. I think, like he said, I've had some seed companies come around talking, hey, you guys want to put another 80 acres or 160 acres of corn out, but you know, I've been two-thirds to one-third probably the last 3 or 4 years anyway. So I think as long as we have decent weather this spring, I think you're probably going to see some of them acres come back whenever you look at the price ratio.
Friday, the federal government reported job creation was essentially in line with pre-trade estimates, leaving intact expectations that there will be further rate hikes at the Fed. Is the rally in the corn pit more than just buying corn acres, but rather speculative dollars hedging against future inflation and away from lagging equity, bond, and foreign exchange markets? Kirk Kimmel.
Well, it's going to depend a lot on interest rates and where people can put their money as part of it. As interest rates go up, they might go to a safe haven there. But no, corn's cool. Corn's the place to go. I work with a hedge fund manager off the West Coast there, and him and all of his buddies are excited about corn. The trend's up. They believe there's future demand with ethanol, and there's maybe a question mark you know, down the road to look at. But overall, I believe it's more of a speculative run from the funds than any fundamental event at this present time.
May corn had a high on the week of 243 and three quarters, a low of 233 and a half. May corn settling the week at 243, up 7 from a week ago. The December corn contract settling at 274 and a half, up 6 and a half from last week. Wet weather in the past week has kept corn planters on the sidelines, and at least a few weather services are continuing to suggest a wet bias for the central U.S. for the next 6 to 10 days. Last year, 14% of the U.S. corn crop was in the ground by April 11th. Matt, what are the conditions on your farm, and what are you hearing from other producers about getting out into the fields?
We were saturated yesterday morning, and then we received 3 to 4 inches of rain, just yesterday. So we're a long ways away. Everybody's itching. You know, everybody's ready. All their equipment's ready for the most part in our area. A lot of guys plant corn 1st of April right around there, and we had quite a bit of corn planted by this time last year. So, yeah, everybody's itching, but we're awfully wet right now, and it's going to be a while.
The December corn contract set a new high on Friday of 275, and now we're hearing from some traders that the 285 area is not out of the question, perhaps before the end of April. What are your thoughts on December corn's upside potential, Paul?
Well, you know, just like any good commodity trader, our focus is probably in a 30-day window here. Anything out there is, we call, very speculative. But we're looking at a trading range in the 265 to 280 trading range here. One of the things that I think it is very definitely a worry situation is the planting weather. The private weather people were a little kinder, gentler as far as warmer weather, less rainfall. But it's the winter wheat growing area that's still dry. And the other factor is the USDA, the whisper is at least 100 million smaller carryover on Monday. And as a result of that, this helps auger for better prices here in the near term, or at least support the price levels we're at.
Thursday, we saw a new open interest record set in corn, and it was thought that index funds may have purchased a significant number of contracts. Has index fund activity changed your thinking on how you work with the markets, Kurt?
Well, yeah, they're a new player here, and they've got a lot of money, and they're bullheaded and stubborn, but it's kind of hard to track them because they're still classified in the commercial category, and until they bust them out and see where they're exactly at, they're one to watch. But they're long-term players in here, and they'll naturally be the one to be a buyer. And the ones we have to watch is the hedge and your everyday trading funds, because they'll continue to follow the technicals. When the green line's above the red, they'll buy, and when the red line's below the green, they'll sell.
And Matt, what are you recommending for producers for new crop sales at this point?
Well, whenever we look at, you know, our fall delivery is in the 240, mid-240 range, I don't see any problem, especially if you haven't sold anything yet, to go ahead and get some sales on the books. These are pretty lucrative. I'm still fairly bullish corn, until we get, I guess, planters rolling in the Midwest. I don't want to get too carried away, but if nothing else, maybe try to put in some price floors, maybe buy some put options either in the SEP or the DEES, you know, 230, 240 put options aren't too awfully expensive. So, I'd like to at least be doing something at this point.
May soybeans, a high on the week of 574.5, a low of 556.5. May beans settling at 557.75, down 13.75 from a week ago. The Noves, 588.75, your weekly settlement, down 14 from last week. Do you anticipate soybean futures to continue its decline, Paul, or have they leveled off in the short term awaiting planting?
Our general impression is, Dave, that the soybean market is still in monumental trouble as far as flat price is concerned. The general impression is that the USDA needs to substantially increase the carryover on soybeans on Monday. And also with this added acreage, the carryover in 2006-07 will balloon up close to 950 million bushels. When this is all said and done, this is a monumental task for the market to absorb. I don't think the market really fully appreciates the magnitude of those numbers.
Why are the commercial accounts net long in soybeans, Kurt?
Well, there's a couple of scenarios there. One is, as I mentioned before, these index funds are classified in there, and they're a buy, a hold, they're long. Then two, producers in some areas have been real tight holders of some beans, so we might have seen a little bit of commercial buying as a hedge. So it could be a combination of various factors that you can look at.
Outside markets were viewed as friendly to grains this past week. Both gold and silver set contract highs. Crude oil continues to be in the mid-60s, creeping toward $70 and points north. How much stock do you place in outside markets when considering pricing action at the Chicago Board of Trade, say, in the next 30 days, Matt?
Well, we're talking about soybeans right now, and gee whiz, it's tough to make much of a bullish case for soybeans, no matter what's going on otherwise. I know it's tough to say that. You know, a lot of times we talk about, you know, if the CRB is going up, if people are buying other commodities, then it's friendly to our other marketplaces. But, you know, you look at corn in the past couple of days, and we trade 7 cents higher, and beans, you know, have traded, they were 4 cents off. So, you know, they're not really moving together. So I don't guess I put a whole lot of stock in it.
Roughly 30% of Brazil's gross national product is in agriculture. And this week, the Brazilian government announced a financial aid package of $6.9 billion, that's in U.S. dollars, for farmers struggling to pay off loans. Does this go far enough, Paul, to solve producer problems in Brazil, or just postpone problems to the next growing season?
Well, I think it's a Band-Aid type of approach. The biggest thing that Brazil has going for it is their conversion of sugar into ethanol. That's the bright spot in that big, massive South American economy. Our general impression is that not only is the farmer in trouble, you know, there's some international processing companies that have also suffered as well with poor earnings and lots of money tied up in that country.
And, Kurt, what are you recommending, if anything, at this point for new crop soybean sales?
Well, I hate to look back on past history, but we were trying to be aggressive seller of cash beans above $6. I know you can't do that right now, but any type of move back to that level, I think you got to be a seller. Then what we've been doing, and we started it this week, is replacing some of these sales with some cheap call. Well, they're not cheap, but some November call options. As the market goes down, those should get fairly reasonable as time goes on. That way, if we have a rust fear or weather scare down the road, you feel comfortable about being sold or sell more.
May wheat, a high of 356.5. This is the Chicago variety, the low, 340.5. May wheat finishing the week at 351.25, up 3.5. July, 364.75, up 3.25 from a week ago. Kansas City wheat gapped to the upside this past week. It's been on an upward trend for the last 8 trading sessions. Matt, does it have the potential to get back to its March 10th high of 456?
Well, I think, you know, the big factor is weather. You know, we're still we don't really know whether our production is going to quite be there. There's been some question marks, but most of that's based upon weather. They haven't, like Paul was saying, they haven't had quite the moisture that we've had right here in the Midwest and all the wheat growing areas. You know, the big factor is weather.
Let's go ahead and look at pricing action at the Merck Live Cattle in April. A high of 81.30, a low of 77.55. April Live Cattle finishing the week at 81.22.5, up 172.5 from a week ago. April Feeders, 102, up 52.5 from last week. In the Lean Hog Pit, April, a high on the week of 58.65, a low of 53.67.5. April Lean Hogs finishing the week at 54.37.5, down 297.5 from last week. May Bellies at 80.02.5, down 132.5 from a week ago. Paul, it's been said by some traders that lean hogs will need to lead cattle futures higher, but cattle have rallied this week while lean hogs have shown weakness. Your thoughts?
Well, what a tremendous train wreck over in the meat area. And, of course, the poor old farmer sure doesn't deserve it, particularly in the cattle industry, because he has had some good profits. The Japanese mad cow problem is a major trading hurdle in our deal, but the feedlots are basically full. They put a lot of cattle on feed, and it's going to be a rough, tough 90 to 120 days in the cattle market, I'm afraid.
May oats finishing the week at 173, down 1/2 from a week ago.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. April literally started off with a bang as severe weather swept across central and southern Illinois at the beginning of the week. Strong storms developing ahead of a cold front raced through Illinois last Sunday with the greatest concentration in the southern two-thirds of the state. The storms produced more than 20 tornadoes and destructive straight-line winds. The storms and the wraparound showers on Monday laid down a nice swath of rain, especially over northern Illinois, where upwards of an inch and a quarter fell during the early part of the week. That starts April off with well above normal rainfall in the northern two-thirds of the state, steadily chipping away at the drought. Additional storms developing ahead of another low early Thursday produced flooding rains across parts of central Illinois. Temperatures this week range from a degree above normal in the east to 4 degrees above normal in western Illinois. It appears another weather system will try and move through Illinois early next week, bringing another chance for scattered showers and thunderstorms. An even stronger system could affect the state by the end of the week. On the positive side, southerly winds most of the week should allow us to enjoy temperatures in the 60s on most days, and even pushing into the 70s at times. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Our guests are Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing, Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. Joining us today from Memphis, Tennessee, is the president of Bondurant Futures, John Bondurant. Welcome to Commodity Week, John.
I enjoy being here.
I was somewhat surprised to learn you won't be planting any corn in 2006. How did you reach that decision? And how are you marketing your crop?
The decision was very easy. It costs us about $390 per acre to raise irrigated corn down here, and that would be about $55 an acre for custom hire and custom haul, which probably you all don't have up there. But that means our break even at a 150 bushel average yield, which is a good yield for down here on irrigated because of our hot weather. 270 is break even on our best ground. Put beans on that same ground, you can make 60 bushels and make over $100 an acre. So a very easy decision. And we have pretty much finished planting all the beans.
And the marketing of it?
I've been very heavily hedged. I'm about 90% hedged. One thing I did this week I sort of liked. I bought two August $5 puts and sold one August 760 call for no cost. And I thought that was pretty good, being that I'm a super bear on beans and think they're going to $4. So thought that was reasonable downside protection for not much cost. And if beans go to 760, I can certainly stand that.
Questions, Matt Bennett.
Yeah, John, I know you're all beans this year, but guys, and you're heavily sold, guys that haven't made a whole lot of sales, or maybe they haven't made any sales, what kind of advice do you give them? Because I know it's pretty gloom and doom right now for guys that haven't made any sales.
I think you just got to gut up and make the sales. I think there's a lot of downside in beans, and right now, what are we, around 20 cents above the loan on national basis, so another 20 cents down in futures, and you're going to start getting LDPs, and then you have the Treasury financing a bear market. And so I don't know. I think there's a lot of downside, and the market's at full carry, which is advantageous to the seller. So I would say anytime it gets close to $6, I'd sell them.
Kirk Kimmel?
Well, John, is that the trend in your area through the south there, more beans?
Oh, yeah. It's the corn acreage has collapsed. I didn't plant any corn for the first time in 20 years. And rice acreage is down. A lot of this has to do with fertilizer prices and diesel fuel prices to run pivots, and it's just prohibitively expensive.
Paul Cooley.
John, Kurt didn't ask the rest of the question. Did your pals aggressively market the beans? And also, on a little sub-note of that, what's the price of farmland down there? And are you a bidder on the acres, or tell us your philosophy?
I doubt that farmers have sold very many beans. Well, I don't know. They've sold some, but it's not a whole lot. And bean land prices down here probably somewhere around $1,200 an acre. Real good land might go $1,500, and that would be fully irrigated and maybe leveled, maybe even approaching $1,600 if you've got level ground. And that's ground that will probably make the same yields that y'all make.
John, Matt again. So do you believe the acreage numbers we came out with in last Friday, with that being said, about what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, I think it's a done deal down here. The bean acreage is, we're planting so fast that they've locked out the corn and the rice. So, yes, I had thought it was going to be 76 million. I was banking on about a half million more in the Delta, which we pretty much got. And I was expecting about a million more acres in the spring wheat belt. I was a little bit, I thought that your area would be only up by the amount of this winter wheat acreage, double cropping, but I was a little surprised at how much Indiana, Ohio, Illinois are up. So the whole thing was about a million higher than I expected.
Well, with a lot more bean acres in it, sort of is the expense of corn. How bullish could we get in corn here with a few less corn acres in?
Well, I'm a bull on corn. I think it's reasonably priced, and I have a world coarse grain crop of around 968 million. I think consumption is probably going to be around 990. Maybe even more. I think the USDA is about 200 million too low on this year's corn consumption. So I could see the corn carryover getting down on a world basis on down to 13.5% or so, which is historically quite bullish, real bullish.
John, you're a commodity trader and had years of experience. What's your opinion of the crude oil market? Would you be an investor in oil stocks? Would you have your fuel tanks full or empty at this juncture? How would you protect it? And is this energy more of a driving force than we really think, or is it more of a killer to the farmer in the long run?
I don't think it's good. I'm running all my tanks on empty. I was long hedged. I started being a long hedger in heating oil futures, which is the same thing as diesel, 4 or 5 years ago at 35 cents. Cleverly got out last year at 99 cents, and now it's almost $2. But my farm managers keep saying, should we stock up on diesel? And I say, no, I think we're touching the highs. And I think people are vastly underestimating what demand destruction is going to happen.
John, what is the interest of ethanol plants down in the Delta?
Pretty much none. We don't raise enough corn down here. I give you, for instance, which is, I think this is going to happen all over the place. In August, corn down here was 50 cents under December futures. In October, it was 50 cents over December futures. And the same day it was 50 cents over, it was 15 under in southern Indiana. Simultaneously, and all that has to do with freight, high cost of trucking.
John, we've talked about what producers need to do on beans. You think they need to go ahead and make sales, and you're pretty bullish corn, similar to really, I guess, all of us in here today.
Yeah, it's frightening. We're all
so
bullish.
You know, I guess what's the upside? What would you suggest to producers if you was going to make recommendations for fall sales?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sort of a bull. I guess I would. You know, the one thing good is the market's at these enormous carrying charges, which is very much in the producer's favor if he's a hedger. So I guess I would be a small hedger somewhat. The only thing that bothers me about corn is we've been exporting technology like mad. Cotton, for instance, India, 3 years ago, produces 12 million bales of cotton. Last year they were 19 million on the same acreage. And corn yields around the world, China, for instance, Argentina, et cetera, are under 100 bushels an acre. And it scares me that one of these days our technology is going to end up there and it ain't going to take long. That would be the only thing that bothers me about corn.
John, looking at maybe a 2.2, 2.3 billion bushel corn carryout and producers' tight holders here and harvest, you know, coming on this fall, do you see a fairly wide basis levels going into this harvest like we did a year ago? I know last year we had weather problems and freight problems, but do you see that situation happen again?
No, I think the exact reverse is going to happen. I think the basis is, might hit historically high levels because of all the tremendous increase in ethanol plants around. You're going to have areas that are just flat out of corn, and the corn futures market, the contract's a horrible contract. You can't take delivery of it. They give it to you on a barge, so you have to freight it around the river someplace to get it to Iowa or wherever you're going. It's a terrible contract. So I would think if anything happens basis-wise, I would perpetually be long the basis as long as it's under the board. I think it's liable to be way over the board by if we have a carryover that gets down to, say, 1,500 million, which is very possible, then I think you could explode the basis.
John, you have been a watcher of the commodity markets. What's your opinion of this wheat situation, particularly in the western third of Kansas? How are you playing that card game?
Oh, I always trade on global statistics, not so much U.S. statistics, but I think the global wheat crop's going to be like 608, and consumption's probably going to be around 615 or 18. So I'm not a bear on wheat particularly. I'm not impressed one way or the other.
John, I think you've answered them all. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, well, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee. And now a chance for a final word from our panelists, Matt Bennett.
I'd like to see producers get rid of any old crop beans and go ahead and make sales on new crop beans and sit tight on corn right now.
Kurt Kimmel?
With the popularity of the corn-bean ratio being spun around, I don't know if it really means anything right now. If you watch the futures do the fund activity, if you're going to trade that, I think you need to correlate to the cash market to get a true reading on it. Other than that, you got to make a decision what you're going to do and do it, because there's going to be people tell you that's right and people tell you that's wrong. So just do what you have in your marketing plan.
Paul Cooley.
There's a lot of conversation about, you know, converting corn into ethanol and making it into an energy-viable product. There's a lot of enthusiasm out there, and that's where the smiles are at in the Midwest.
We would like to thank our panel, Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain, Paul Cooley of ADM Investment Services, and Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. Remember, you can access Commodity Week directly at your computer. Go to our website at willag.org. There you'll find a link to the show and also instructions for receiving Commodity Week by podcast. And be sure to join us Monday morning at 8:49 Central Time when we'll get the word from USDA on April-ending stocks and world supply and demand numbers. This is Dave Dickey.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.